I really hope this is the opening of the show so everyone will know how crazy you are.
So everyone will know how amazing I am and how many people should love me. Listen, when you're really good at pachinko, well.
How many 3DSs do you own, and why can't you bring, like, one of them with you, like, wherever you go, so that you stop yourself from playing this game?
So I think that's part of the equation, is the more Nintendo products you own, it actually knows, and that's your reward. So that's why Jeff gets better pulls.
Do you think that it, like, links to my Club Nintendo account, mm-hmm. and is like, oh.
I keep getting a child with green hair who's like, I like magic.
I think that happens no matter what, Jamie. You gotta, like, play through it until you get enough pebbles, widgets, to then actually re-pull your five characters.
Okay.
No, he's saying when he pulls, he gets the child who loves magic.
Oh.
Every time.
Huh.
What was I gonna say? I have played matches where they're literally just four Takumis. And it's the worst. They're just unwinnable.
Maybe you should go back to Mario Run.
I beat Mario Run all the way
through. Run Mario Run. Game.
You got all the special super coins?
I did, yeah. I love me some Mario Run.
I heard they were making an easy version of that game or something.
Was it called just Mario Run?
I think they made, like, Toad Run easier or something. Like, okay. You lose fewer toads or something. I don't know.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Good.
Hey, let's talk about Fire Emblem Heroes since we're doing this. I mean, I guess, should we say this is Boss Barrel Radio? Is that a thing that's happening?
We should. We should say it's Boss Barrel Radio, and we should say that we're on iTunes now. Hey, everybody.
Whoa.
Welcome to iTunes.
Crazy. It's great to be here, guys. Yep.
Feels so good. Feels so right. Back in the back in the saddle.
Back where we belong. Mm-hmm.
My name's Griffin Hoffman, and here are the other people I'm with. Say your names.
Your names.
Oh.
Your names?
Oh, snap.
Dang.
I'm Jeff Brewer.
I'm James Scherer, also known as Jamie Scherer. You can choose it, really, either one. It really doesn't, you know, either one. It's not a big deal. Just choose one, and I don't care.
Sometimes on weekends, we call you the diddler. Or maybe I do. Sometimes in my sleep, I call you the diddler.
So normally with podcasts, you have, like, a very structured introduction where it's, like, the same format every time. Where you're like, hey, I'm Griffin Hoffman, and I'm on Twitter at Griff.
I'm also Casey Kasem.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys got anything you want to pitch there for, like, what do we do for a standard format? Now that we're on iTunes. By the way, this is not episode 176. This is the episode for the week of 2/13/2017.
True.
It's the episode formerly known as episode 176. It's now just a symbol in honor of Prince.
Yes, Valentine is also known as Valentine's Day Liar. Liar's Valentine's Day.
I got a good one. Here, let me throw it by you guys. Welcome to My Brother and Me. This is an advice show for the modern era.
You said that wrong. You said it wrong.
Nope. We just got sued.
Damn it.
We just got sued, and we also got posted on teengoogle.com.
Also,
we're now part of the Macarena.
We are accidentally top of the iTunes charts now, too.
What if we...
Wait, hold on. I'm gonna plug...
Oh, shit. I just heard it. All of our spouses made podcasts, too.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Isn't that great?
That fast, huh?
All you have to do is...
I just had a child, and they have a successful podcast.
Nice.
My dad is huge on the internet, out of nowhere.
Your father would
That was already a known quantity that your dad is huge.
Yeah, I was going to say, your dad, anywhere your father goes that has mimetic potential, he would do well. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm going to plug real quick something about myself. I have never looked at naked horses before, and if you say that I have, you're wrong.
I'm going to plug something about myself. I have the most popular Bud Scherer Tumblr on the internet.
How about,
Jamie, you actually have a YouTube channel, which you could actually plug.
Oh, yeah.
You have views, man.
Yeah. Danger Toasty is the channel. Should I just go by Danger Toasty now? Give myself a little bit of a rasp. I'm Danger Toasty.
I like to call you the toaster. Because you really warm up my buns.
Yeah.
All right.
This is tough. This is tough. Well, I'll give it a good... I'll put the noggin to it, and I'll come up with something.
What do you want to be known for? Like, what is your image? What's your brand, Dr. James Scherer?
I really want to be the doctor who doesn't kill people on the reg.
That's unique. That's
just if they've been bad. Just if they ever cross you, you will murder them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it'll make it look like an accident.
Yeah. It's in my power.
Yeah.
And then I'll pronounce you dead.
Oh, that's good. Jamie, I think that's
how
you just...
pronounce them. Wait, and then you'll pronounce them man and wife because you're also a rabbi.
Nope. I think you need to just end every podcast with, I pronounce this podcast dead.
Sounds good.
Time.
Wait, but then, okay. Our time on iTunes was short-lived.
It was. Well, it's a good run, everybody.
Pack it up.
Back to just the website thing that nobody can listen to, except yes. for my wife.
What if we introduce ourselves as Video James, Video Jeff, and Video Griff?
I love it.
Yeah? Okay, good.
That's all right. I do. Yeah. We should probably then just rebrand the whole thing as just Video Friends.
Oh my God. That's actually good. I actually like that.
Is this the birth of a new era?
Can it be Video Friends with an A and a Z?
Yes. Is there any other way to spell it?
I don't think so.
There's no I in France.
It's actually video.friends is the website that you go to.
Oh, man.
Well, Video Friends.
Well, we've spent about 10 minutes just shooting the shit about our names, so we just want to, like, just dive into video games? Or...
Oh, no, we could also talk about topical stuff right now. I mean, hey, the Super Bowl happened. It's Valentine's Day. What are you guys getting for your SOs?
I got a giant box. I don't know if she's up here. I got two things and dinner reservations.
Is one a life-size cutout of Bud?
You don't really need it when he's in the house.
But what about when he's not in the house?
No, you should set one up right next to him.
The thing is that he's kind of like the bad guy in Resident Evil 7. It's like you actually spend most of your time avoiding him, and then occasionally he busts through a wall.
Is it the same wall where the pot room was?
Yes.
Do you ever find him in there?
No, that is permanently sealed, man.
That's what you think. He's performing all manner of occult rituals in there. And also just, like, reading JAMA.
Wait, do you have a secret room in your house?
Yeah, when we moved in the attic, there's, like, a space. First of all, there's a crawl space that goes all the way around the top floor, which is really creepy.
Uh-huh.
And as part of that crawl space, at a certain point, it opens up into,
they call
like,
that the Macaulay Culkins.
The Culkins tube?
Have bandits ever tried to infiltrate your home, Jamie?
Not the Jeffries tube, the Culkins tube.
The Macaulay tube, yeah.
No, it opened, there was this, like, so we found this, like, place where it opened up, and there was also part of the wall that you could remove to get there, and it literally just had, like, posters for bands from the 70s and, like, some smoking paraphernalia in there.
Now I totally understand why you like Gone Home so much.
Exactly.
You've been living it.
I live it.
He lives Gone Home.
But should I start off? Because I've played too many games.
I have a secret room that I could talk about too, but that's okay. We can talk about video games. Say that for the next podcast.
Whoa. No. I want to hear about yours. You guys.
Do the authorities want to know going. About the secret room?
Yeah. I assume everybody has a secret room in their house, don't they?
I can't talk about any secret rooms I may or may not have in my house on this podcast.
Oh, by the way, guys, we are on iTunes now as a comedy podcast too. So that's why we got to get the funnies up.
Okay.
This can't be strictly business.
Gotta mix that business and pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Oh, man, a patient told me some really bad jokes today. I can't remember them. Oh, God. Oh, man.
Well, while you're thinking, let me tell you about my secret.
I got one. Okay. I got one. All right. Okay. Why couldn't the teacher see straight in class?
Because she was visually impaired.
Because she couldn't control her pupils.
Oh, dang.
Oh, my God. Wait, how come the scientist got wet?
I don't know why.
Because he was having a brainstorm. All right.
What do you call a blind deer?
What?
What do you call what?
What do you call a deer with no eyes? Or a blind deer?
The only way I finish?
No idea.
No idea.
Oh, God.
Did we fulfill our comedy contractual obligation now? Will iTunes give us the iTunes bucks?
We got it. We did it.
All right. We got that fat iTunes dollar. Approved.
If YouTube money is any indication, we're going to be rolling in it.
We're going to get a whole roll of pennies.
You guys want me to? You guys want me to give you the latest figures? Hold on one sec. I'll open up YouTube Studio on my phone. Just give me a moment.
Yeah,
here.
Danger Toasty. How much you making? Disclose those taxes.
All right, guys.
Wait, are you allowed to do this?
Lifetime revenue of my channel, which has thousands and thousands of views, a 30 cent.
What?
Nice.
Yeah, 30 cent.
That's beautiful.
Also, you can't get it out of YouTube until you make $100. So there's that.
Do they send you like a hat or like a shirt for YouTube creators?
Can
after
you
that
transfer
point?
It to a Team Fortress hat?
At what point do you get a DX Racer chair?
I think you have to. No, that's investment. You have to get the chair. And then.
No, I think if you become successful, DX Racer just sends you a chair.
Oh, okay.
Every fucking YouTuber has that weird ass chair.
Yeah, that no one actually thinks is comfortable.
No. It looks awful.
Yeah.
All right. We gonna do this shit?
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
You guys ready to party?
Let's do it.
Shantae. All
right.
Either you guys try this half genie hero game?
Nope, you talked about it last time. This sounds pretty good.
It does sound good.
Yes, it is amazing. So, it's not like previous entries, the most recent entries into the Shantae series, in that it is not really Metroidvania.
How is it different from the last time you talked about it?
Oh, did I just...
shit.
Bam.
Whoa.
Hello.
Oh my
God. Gotta keep it tight.
Jesus, I forgot that I did. Okay, yeah, that's why I wrote here that I just wanted to talk about the final boss, which has...
Nope. No, take that again. Take that again.
Wait.
What?
Did I talk about the final boss last time?
No. Just say it like you were going to say it there in your Joyzy accent.
Final boss?
There it is.
The final boss.
He was so hot. Oh, my God.
He's got so many phases, you guys. It's crazy.
It was unbearable.
It was unbearable. He's so many phases. I died like 5 times.
How big was he, if you were to give an estimate?
He was about the size, I don't know, Bon Jovis.
Was he large or was he giant? Or
I would say he was 3 Bon Jovis by 5 Christies.
Are you trying to say he was huge, Griffin?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? Huge? Yeah. Oh,
man.
Mine's CH.
God. All right, yeah, I forgot that I already talked about that. But yeah, the last boss was amazing. And they also have an underwater sequence that was actually fun. Huh, and throughout that game, underwater stuff is actually fun because, as I mentioned last time, you transform into these animals to do these platforming challenges, and a couple of them are designed to go through the water. So it, like, solves that problem of underwater platforming always being the worst. So that's that. I'm just going to run through the small ones. So Bound, I've also played. It's that independent game on PS4 where you play a ballerina in this kind of fantastical world.
Wait. Okay, that's not Closure.
No. Bound is not Closure. So you so there's no fighting in the game, but there are elements in the world that hurt you, and you kind of dance to get them to stop. And it's all framed by this really interesting narrative of a pregnant woman in real life. So it's kind of these, like, serene sequences of you walking on a beach as a pregnant woman in, like, modern day, normal world. And that's interspersed with these really fantastical sequences where you're dancing through these very polygonal, very, like, hypochromatic, abstract worlds. It's really cool, and I think it's it looks fantastic. It's really visually arresting.
Are you dancing while pregnant, like Queen Bey?
Unfortunately, no.
If you were more successful, would you say the game should be retitled to Starbound?
Whoa! Scale back on the comedy. We don't want an overlay.
Yeah. Witcher 3 is a quick one. I just want to finish.
Hold on. Griffin Starbound pun made me chuckle, fish.
God damn it.
All right. Carry on.
Witcher 3, you get... So, I really like it. I like how quickly you get sucked back in. That game is really complicated, but they made a bunch of changes to the UI recently that make it actually easy to get back in, even though there's a thousand things to think about.
Mm-hmm.
What I love about that game is that the acting and writing in the side quests of Witcher 3 trumps, and this is a game from 2015, trumps like so much that I've played since then. It's ridiculous.
Hmm.
I played this side quest in Novigrad where the mages in Novigrad are being persecuted, so you have to help them escape. And this was a side quest that had like multiple new characters voice acted for the side quest. It had a romance built into the side quest. It had its own dungeon built into the side quest. It's amazing. And you could just completely not, you know, do this at all. And that's what really makes that game like absolutely incredible. There is no fetch quest BS in that game. It's like every side quest, even the short ones, have something really tangible and great to them. That's why I keep going back to that game. And I really hope that one day I beat it so I can play the Blood and Wine and Hearts of Stone expansions that I paid for. But
you know, if you beat the game, you'll turn into the last Starfighter as you become Geralt the Witcher.
What is happening?
That was my joke from before that now I remembered. It was pretty good, wasn't it?
Nice.
No.
Comedy. Hashtag comedy.
Wait, Jamie, are you going to really like that game once you get it in boost mode? Spoilers.
I'm playing it on PC, PC Master Race.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. All right,
never mind.
Another game I played on PC.
Okay, so I think this is a good segue, because The Witcher 3, notable cat sequence.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that sequence when Geralt just stares at the cat for a while and the cat stares back and it's like, man, that was really weirdly shot.
You mean like all the cutscenes in that game?
No. Like you're pursuing, you finish the Bloody Baron stuff trying to find his like daughter or whatever, and then you go into this like house in the big city and there's a cat on the table and it's like cuts to the cat, cut to Geralt, cut to the cat, cut to Geralt.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they both have cat eyes, don't they, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds amazing.
Neo has the best cat sequence in the entire world.
Oh, I think this was shown in advance. I think this was stuff you could see before the game came out. Tell me more.
Well, maybe you can check out the scene on my YouTube channel. Actually, our YouTube channel. It's the Boss Barrel has a YouTube channel, and I posted the video that happens in which you meet Hanzo Hattori, the ninja master of acclaim, and your character in Neo is talking with him and striking a bargain, and all of a sudden he doesn't respond, or you don't respond to his answer, and he reaches inside his breast pocket, which essentially is like his robe flaps, and your character braces for combat, and all out comes a cat he pulls, and he looks at its face, and it cuts to the cat's face, and its eyes dilate. And then he says, "Oh, it's almost dawn."
What the fuck?
Later in the game, you find that Hanzo Hattori has been using that cat as a clock.
I knew this. It was the best game of all time.
It really, that moment really struck me.
So should I be ordering? Neo before the $48 discount wears off?
Yeah, no. Order, no, wait, and pay full price.
You have a $48 discount?
You know what I mean, the Prime discount.
Oh, wait, I thought that was only for unreleased games.
No, first 2 weeks.
Holy shit!
Yeah. Have you missed out?
Yeah! I paid 60 bucks for that game!
Wow!
It's worth it, though.
Alright. I'm adding to cart.
Yes, I've been strongly considering keeping this one in the old stable because it's pretty good. But Jamie, it's your call. Do you want to move on to your next game, or do you want to talk about Neo now?
No, let's lean
talk
in.
About Neo with me,
let's
guys.
Lean
I'm,
in.
I'm, tonight. I want all of you tonight.
No. You lead the discussion because I'm only in the.
Might not get tomorrow. Let's do it tonight.
Keep going. Don't say anything, Griffin.
Got somebody sexy, tell him hey.
Hey!
All right, I'm done.
So, Neo, it's Dark Souls. Surprise.
No.
Well,
no.
Yeah, it is. Essentially, the format is like the Dark Souls kind of.
Yes. Broadly,
we talked about this when the beta came out and all that. So I think it's a pretty known factor that it is. You know, this sounds really stupid, but it's Japanese Dark Souls. It's Japanese Dark Souls because one
Dark Souls well, is Japanese.
Dark Souls is Japanese.
There's the joke. Yep, you guys found it. Nice work. but it's you're playing in a Japan setting, like you're playing in very much a Japanese setting. At least at this point. I mean, there's some moments in the game that take you out of that realm, but for the most part, it is in Japan. So you're Samurai Dark Souls, what have you. It's very much like Dark Souls. Very very much the same conventions of like enemies that respawn in areas like the Mega Man kind of learning tells and whatnot from the enemies that you're fighting and bosses that you fight.
I want to ask you a question.
Yeah, maybe that's the best way to go.
Okay. When I played the demo, there were like four different fighting styles. Mm. Is that a thing, and is it still complicated?
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
Yes, there are still four different fighting styles. There's three stances, high, medium, low. And then you have different weapon types that have different like attributes. But, you know, if you want to go into a single sword samurai, or if you want to go into an axe wielder or whatnot. So kind of in the same vein as Dark Souls, where you have a weapon type that influences the way that you engage in combat. But this game, with every weapon type, there's three stances that influence how you are engaging in combat.
But Jeff, let me tell you this: I played that demo too, and I really hated it. And I
just couldn't figure it out. Like, I loved the atmosphere. I just couldn't figure it out.
And I really think that this game is fabulous. I think it's extraordinary. Okay. I also... Okay.
I agree with you, Jamie.
Riddle me this, Griffin. I hate Souls games. Like, I hate them. And this is so much better. It just feels faster.
Well, because this was Japanese. Yeah.
And it's punishing, but...
That's why you like it.
It's punishing, but it's not... I don't think it's punishing in the same way. When I die in Dark Souls or in Bloodborne... I actually played a sizable chunk of Bloodborne. When I die in Bloodborne, I sometimes don't feel like it's my fault. Or I feel like I stopped paying attention for a split second and I died. And it's just so punishing. In this game, I feel like it is extraordinarily punishing. But I feel like when I die, not only do I feel like it's actually my fault... I also don't get as frustrated.
Yes.
Because I feel like it's easier to farm. Even if you... I lost all my souls or whatever just now. I don't even care. Yeah, I lost all my XP. It's fine. Because you can just farm it back, you know, relatively easily.
Yeah.
So I feel like there are substantial changes.
Oh, you're right. There are substantial changes. But the framing is still... It is a Dark Souls game.
Sure.
You know, there are checkpoints in the level that will allow you to kind of respawn in certain areas based on your progress. But then when you do that, it'll also reset the world and enemies will still come back into their regular routes. A single enemy can dispatch you if you play poorly. But I agree with you, like, 100%, Jamie. There's just something about this game, and that something is, some might say it's diluted, but I think that it is just a little bit more realistic and reasonable, where you can kind of jump into this game and in a matter of, I don't know, minutes to an hour, have a master, or an ability to manipulate the world, to engage in combat and play that is something that would take hours upon hours in Dark Souls.
Yeah.
I feel like learning Dark Souls is like ways takes like a solid like 3 to 4 hours, and then once you get it, you never really lose it. But I think that it may be that you didn't ever like get past that steep learning curve, and it sounds like this game lacks that, which is good. For accessibility's sake.
Yeah, when you run up to the first enemy in the game, there's like, as far as I can tell, there's like three tutorial levels, and I'm maybe in the third.
Oh, they keep on coming.
Oh, God.
They never stop.
So, like, you run up to an enemy in this game, and you can kill it. and it just it doesn't.
That's true in Dark Souls as well. I mean, the first enemies in Dark Souls are quite weak.
But even when you get to the first yokai in this game,
okay,
you can still even someone like me who's impatient and doesn't have any experience with this type of game, I can tell myself, okay, I'm going to dash in there, I'm going to hit him a couple times, and I'm going to dash out, and if he comes toward me doing this, I'm going to move over this way. It's mm-hmm. it's not, I think, as impenetrable as Dark Souls or Bloodborne is, and there's also this.
In terms of,
it's funny because
For the impenetrableness, there's a lot of kind of like sidetracks that you can take to avoid that. One, like Jamie, you said, the experience seems to flow more quickly. So if you're feeling like you're underpowered, you can buff your character up in a pretty quick manner. Two, you have an ability called a living weapon, which is essentially like your Super Saiyan mode where you click a couple buttons and now you're like invulnerable and you do massive damage. And with that mode, you know, you can get enough items or you can cheese the game enough to have that at your disposal at any time. So let's say you do encounter a very beefy boss, you can take a good chunk of them down. Now this is me like two major levels in, so I'm assuming that that's going to go away eventually, but just having that like invulnerable state is really nice, like safety net. If I'm like, well, I'm just not going to set the controller down, I can worst case use this, pool all my resources, and just kind of go in, go ham and make progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that you know, there are even other things that make it more accessible. Ranged weapons are very viable.
Oh, very significant, yeah.
And mm-hmm. and you can headshot, you can one-shot enemies. Like, I try to take on enemies one at a time, so if maybe there's like two or three in a group, I can just headshot two of them. And then by the time I'm done with that, there's one on me, but it's okay because it's, you know, one versus one. The other thing is that there's this key pulsing, which is basically an active reload for your stamina.
Mm.
So
that's a really good way to put it, yeah.
So, like...
Oh, cool.
Instead of Dark Souls style just swinging until that green bar is done and then you're fucked, it's like are we cursing or not on this new incarnation of the...
You bet your sweet sorry ass.
As long as I'll curse with comedy.
I'll try to keep it as clean as possible. So you can press R1 after you've delivered a couple moves and your bar is down to quickly regenerate stamina. Or, if you spec into something that I spec'd into, instead of pressing R1 while you're stationary, you can actually quickly regain stamina as a dodge. So that I spec'd into early, and that's been, like, super helpful. So as I'm dodging out of the way, I'm earning back stamina, and then I can jump back in.
Yeah.
So it sounds like
this game has more action elements to it, which
yes.
makes sense given the lineage, given, like, the Team Ninja.
Yes, heritage. Yes. And, Jeff, it is... It does require a little bit more of, like, controller piano. So, like Jamie's saying, like, yes, you are dodging and moving around and regenerating stamina with your active reload, but it's not quite as convenient as, like a Dark Souls game. It's you kind of understand the flow and momentum because there's only so many actions that you can do. With this,
yeah,
you're given
Dark Souls,
so many more skills and powers that it takes a lot more to manage, which means a lot more, like, finger movements.
And that was my initial reaction. Like, Dark Souls, for all of its complication and arcane stat mechanics, like, the core game is just rolling. Like, that is all you do in that game.
Yeah.
You just dodge attacks.
And that's where this game separates itself, where it's like, okay, well, you can dodge, you can block, things regenerate in interesting ways. You're not punished for getting below your stamina level. It's just so much more approachable in a way that somebody was like, I really like the Dark Souls franchise. Let's make a better game, or let's make a more approachable game.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I hear that it can become as, if not more, punishing than the Souls games. And I think that even if it does become extraordinarily difficult, I still think it will be a less frustrating experience because you have all these options at your fingertips. And it won't just be me banging my head against the wall trying to do the same thing again and again and again, because I can actually, you know, attack.
Like spec into a different thing or something.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like there's magic that you can spec into that will slow enemies down if they're too fast for you. So, you know, that's always an option. Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of stuff.
Interesting. I want to give it a shot. I mean, it sounds like it has a lot more possibility, and I love games with possibility. I think that's what I loved about Dark Souls, the original Dark Souls, and I think it was Lost in 2 and 3, and to some degree Bloodborne as well. Just feeling like there was so much potential. Because I think Dark Souls, like, what I loved about that game is like, there was a gazillion weapons, they all had different quirks to them, there was the magic system, everything was felt, even if it wasn't viable, like, there was a lot of shit that you could uncover.
For sure.
Less so with Bloodborne, even though I did love Bloodborne. So if that's the case with this game, where there's just a lot of weird potential, I'm excited about that.
There's also little green men with butts.
Yep. Little Kermits.
That excites me, too. In a different way. In a different part of my body.
Jamie, how far have you gotten through the game at this point?
So I'm... I got through the Tower of London, I got through the training mission, and now I am towards the end of that whole first village. So okay. I fought my first few yokai.
Did you fight the boss of the last level yet?
No, I don't believe I've made it there yet.
Okay, yes. So after you finish that first mission, the whole kind of game frame changes. It's actually very startling. Should I say? Well, I guess it's not like spoiler territory. It's just things change. So instead of kind of going on to like, okay, you beat the boss and now you walk into the next area, it's like, okay, you're done with that area. You never get to go back.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, actually. So I will go back and collect all my little green butt men.
Yeah, do that. And then you get into like a world map that's kind of Destiny-esque that has like special limited time quests and side missions and main missions.
Whoa.
Whoa. Limited weird. Time, huh?
Yeah.
Like what?
Limited real world time?
Like, or? It reminds me of, yes. I can't confirm if like it's limited real world time, but it, like Destiny, you have like challenge maps that circulate throughout the week or whatever. And this has like challenge maps that are like, this is way too hard for you right now. Don't ever do it until you've prestiged 9 times. I'm like, oh, okay. That's interesting.
Wait, which Nintendo mobile app is Destiny? I need this framed in terms of Nintendo mobile apps.
Miitomo?
Yeah, it's exactly like Miitomo.
That's good to know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Is it the restricted time? Is it like a week? Is it a month? Or is it like a day?
I can't speak to that because I don't know. But I know that the levels and the selection process is very similar to Destiny, like Dark Maps or Map of the Week or whatever, where it's... You know, an extremely difficult version of possibly an existing map or something that already may have you've played.
Kind of sounds like World Tendency from Demon's Souls.
Maybe. I don't really know that, but yeah, maybe.
So Demon's Souls has this mechanic where there's a black and a white world tendency, and they're like easier and harder versions of the same world, basically. Does this sound... Anyway.
I think I heard Donald Trump talking about that.
Oh, topical humor.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag comedy.
Guess what, guys? Neo looks great on the PS4 Pro.
Whoa.
I'll talk more about that later, listener. Whoa. You just gotta wait. You just gotta cool your jets, listener. That's coming up.
Hey, Griff, it looks like you played some more Gravity Rush. Do you tell me about that?
Not too much to say. I finally got to the portion where you can fly around and do all that stuff, and it's kind of boring, and that's about it.
Oh, my God. Motherfucker.
Yep.
Griff, why don't you, or Jeff, why don't you talk about some stuff that you played? Or sure, what were you going to say? I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I want to get... Griff, did you like the original Gravity Rush?
I did.
Okay. But you don't feel like the sequel does anything to excite you?
Nope.
Is it just too similar?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
All right.
That was a great...
I'll have to see when I actually play it. I can talk about some stuff. So, still trucking through Dragon Quest. I think it's really great. I'm having a lot of fun with it, but I don't need to tell you guys anything about it. It's still the same game. you should play it, though. It's definitely of the Dragon Quests. If you like 9 at all...
Mm.
It's not the same as 9, but it's really fun. It's probably the best Dragon Quest I've played.
Which of your 30 3DSs are you using to play it primarily?
I'm using my my small one. I have not switched back to my Zelda one.
Gotcha.
Okay, if in my opinion, the best Dragon Quest would then become a Final Fantasy game, have we gotten there yet, or no? Is it still tedious, boring, and sludgy?
I mean, no. I mean, I don't know. You still have to go to churches to save.
Okay.
So there's that.
Enough said.
Speaking of RPG stuff, I just want to mention one more thing about Nioh, which is really important, and that is the degree to which the role that loot plays in the game. It plays a gigantic role, and you're constantly getting new loot, and loot really makes you more powerful, it seems like. I mean, I'm really early, but you feed loot to other loot, and you can exchange loot for experience, and
This sounds more and more like Destiny the more you talk.
Yes, it definitely does. I mean, you're not wrong, Jamie. And once you get out of that first level, it takes on a whole different degree, too.
Nice. But I just wanted to mention it because it passes my RPG test, which is when you want to equip a new weapon, it very easily tells you if that weapon is better or worse than the one you already have.
It tells you very superficially. Like, it's kind of the Borderlands thing where it's like, this thing does more damage, but it may be doing more damage, like raw damage, but you have a gajillion attributes that are not accounted for when you're comparing stats.
True, true.
Although, I'd rather have that than the Blizzard approach of literally just giving me the raw DPS number. Literally, in Diablo 3, it's like, here's the DPS of this. Here is the DPS of that.
Just to stay with the Nioh topic for one more second, and Jamie, what kind of playstyle are you playing with? I'm curious.
I read a bunch of stuff beforehand because I really wanted to get into it, but I didn't want to feel like I couldn't, you know, hack it, and I get frustrated easily. So people were saying that swords are a good way to go because they are, you know, medium damage, but they're quick, and also they're not long like a spear, so you don't, like, hit it against a wall or a tree and then recoil.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going with swords primarily, and I just put a bunch of stats into, like, heart and body so far.
Right on. Okay, so you're doing single sword, not double swords?
Single sword, yeah.
Yeah, baby, me too. I'm doing single sword.
It's working.
Do you have a shield in your other hand?
What's a shield?
Sword and board?
What's a shield?
What are you talking about?
Are there no shields in this game?
You block with your weapon.
Yeah.
And it's actually an effective block, too.
Is it like a katana that you're using?
Yes.
Like a Okay. You're dual-handing a sword. Gotcha.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Very cool. That is more true to life with samurai, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. You guys have any more things on Nioh before I so rudely jump over to my shit?
I was just going to ask Jamie one last thing, and that's, have you tried the other weapons? And if not, you should try the sickle and weight, because that thing is so much fun. And if I had a million hours of my life to put towards this game, I would love to play that, because it's so cool.
Yeah, it's a different stat, though, which is kind of infuriating. Yeah. Like, you really have to...
Is it a dex weapon or something?
Yeah,
something
more
like
or less.
That. So you have to spec into it if you want to be good at it. My secondary weapon is spears, and I like them for annoying people who are also using spears.
I hate spears.
I find for enemies that are using...
Dark Souls spears, I love.
If enemies are using spears, I find that it's easier to kill them with my own spear because mm-hmm. they're attacking from really long away, and then I can also attack from really far away. Huh. So,
yeah. Gene and I cut a video of playing Nioh the other night, and it's very bad because we were both pretty drunk. but then I played more of it the other night with Colin, and we made some amazing progress through the game, just like... Notice the grindstone, like actually playing games, like humans should play games, and yes, like sword is my favorite. I love the kunai and chain or whatever, and I hate spears, and I'm not even really using a secondary weapon. I just kind of play around with other stuff, but yes,
nice.
The game's really, really good.
That game is really good. I was thinking this when I was playing it like just an hour ago. I can feel it getting its hooks in me, mm-hmm. you know, but in a good way, not in like a Fire Emblem Heroes way, in like a
hey, we're out there.
And like I love just slashing in this game. I love mm-hmm. I love taking out low level bad guys in this game. Everything about this is fun.
Yeah. So, like yeah. I tried to convey in the video, one of the most satisfying things in the game is just a very direct antithesis to Dark Souls, which is when you just jam on that attack button and slash somebody into oblivion, they then die, but then you just dismember their entire corpse into a little pile of jelly. And that is so great, because in Dark Souls, like, you keep swinging and you just, like, fall off a cliff. This game, you just keep going, and it's like, yeah, suck it, dude, who once killed me.
Also, you don't die, and then your face turns green, which really got to me in those Souls
games. That's probably a really good point, too, yeah. You do lose your spirit, though.
Okay, yeah. Use your spirit animal if you die, but you can get it back when you find your body. Or, as I just found out, if you don't find your body,
sounds exactly like Dark Souls, Jamie.
If you don't find your body and die again, you'll get your spirit animal back.
Yeah, but then you lose all your experience. But on the other hand, like, it doesn't matter since experience flows so readily.
Yeah.
I feel like experience flows pretty readily in Dark Souls as well, but perhaps that is not the typical experience.
Listen, Jeff, as someone who hasn't played very much of those games, you're wrong.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm excited. I did order it while
Listen,
we were
Jeff,
talking,
as a person who's not very good at video games, I'm having a great time with this one.
Well, I ordered it, so I'm excited to dig in and see what it's like.
Nice. I think you're going to like it a lot.
Yeah.
Definitely. I hope you do.
I mean, you start in the Tower of London with your shirt off, and then you punch through a wall, so...
Yeah, I'm sold.
Yeah, you do start in a prison cell, exactly like previous Dark Souls games.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And Skyrim.
And when
is
you,
it Skyrim? Oh, wait, no, Skyrim, you don't start in prison.
And when you break Oblivion. Out of your cell by punching through a wall, the British guard is like, what? And then he thrusts his sword at you with the limpest of wrists.
Oh, that sounds great.
All right. Sorry, that's the last tangent I have to make on Neo, but it's a very good game. Check out the videos that I have up.
I'm excited to watch, actually.
Yeah, me too. It'll get me hyped for the game, so I'll check them out. Carrying on with me. So I'm still playing a lot of stuff I was playing last week, or last couple weeks. I've gotten farther in XCOM Long War, or Long War 2, rather. That's a real good mod if you like XCOM a lot. I was playing it on Commander difficulty, which is like the difficulty up from normal, which I played for XCOM, and I had some growing pains with XCOM 2 when I did Commander difficulty. When I did it for Long War, I just got absolutely demolished. And then I went down to normal difficulty and got absolutely demolished several more times before figuring out how to play this game. Hmm. So for me, it's like highly satisfying in that it's infuriating when I can't figure it out. But now that I've kind of got how it works down, it's giving me that same rush. Like, it's got a whole bunch of other layers to the strategy that go beyond what XCOM 2 offered. You have to manage multiple squads because you're like, it has this new element of infiltration where you have to send out your squad a couple days in advance, and like, they have to infiltrate the area before you can go, and depending on how infiltrated it is, like, you can face more or fewer enemies.
Does that end up being just like kind of like a stats game there, where you're putting guys up with abilities against a number wall, and then they come back with a success rate, or are you actually playing in that?
So the way it works is you'll be like on your map scanning, and missions will come up a lot. Like, you'll get missions coming up like every couple of days, if sometimes even more than that, and they all have different expiration timers on them. And so, like, some of them will expire in, like, a day, some of them will expire in, like, 10 days, and you have to choose which missions you want to take. And the thing is, none of them are instantaneous when they launch, mm-hmm. so you have to send your team out, and depending on how long you have, you can send more units, usually. So, like, if you have a long time, because the larger your squad, the longer it takes to infiltrate. So, basically, like, if you have, like, a 10-day timer, you can send, like, a squad of 7 and still comfortably infiltrate. And if you have like a 2-day timer, you can really only send like 1 or 2 people, so it's not really a good idea. Mm. So it's like, it's kind of this thing of balancing. Basically, the way it plays out, once you send a squad, like, they infiltrate up to a certain value, and then you can spend intel to increase that value a little bit. But basically, the level of infiltration they reach determines how strong the enemy force that they face is. But then, like, there's this additional layer where, like, some missions you can only send out, like, 4 dudes. And, like, you know, do you want to face, like, an entire squad of enemies with only four dudes when on another mission you could send out seven? And, like, do you really need the resource that that mission is offering? There's all these different layers. I mean, it's definitely something for somebody who really likes strategy games a lot and did, like, thought that XCOM 2 wasn't complicated enough. So it's the niche is small, but it is damn good. And it has caused me to change my playstyle in XCOM again. Such that, like, did you guys play much of any XCOM 2 at all?
I really wanted to get into it. I found that that game was extraordinarily, breathtakingly punishing and difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
I remember getting to a mission really early on where there are these enemies that just control your mind and turn you against your compatriots. And they just massacred me. And I tried time and time again, and I just found no way around it. I just think that it's really hard, and I turned the difficulty down, didn't do anything. My whole squad got decimated, so I actually re-rolled, got back to the same mission, couldn't get through. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, dealing with those enemies is really hard, and it's a game where if you fuck up a movement, like, you're going to lose a guy, mm-hmm. and then they're gone forever. So it'll fuck with you. But, Jamie, do you remember the concealment mechanic? Do you remember vaguely how that worked?
Very vaguely. Can you refresh my memory?
So basically, every mission you start out concealed, and then when you make your first attack, you lose it.
Oh, yeah.
So typically, what I would do in the missions is I would, like, go and, like, look for the first enemy pod, and then, like, pop my concealment on them, basically, and then just continue the mission as normal. But now, given, like, the difficulty of this game and the fact that sometimes you're sending small squads against huge forces... Like, I'll have missions where, like, I am stealth up till I get to the objective, and then I just run out of the level, having killed maybe zero enemies, maybe three enemies.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it really, the strategy layer is enhanced with all the infiltration shit, and then the tactical layer has gotten even crazier as well. And there's, like, instead of the four classes or however many were in the base game, there's, like, seven or eight classes, and they all have additional skill trees. It's so complicated, but it's amazing. I love
Jeff,
it.
Jeff, awesome. do you with, like... With avoiding combat and situations like that, do you feel like your characters are underpowered when you get into later games?
No, so one of the cool things that it does is it's retooled the experience system a little bit so that the vast majority of your experience comes from completing missions, not
nice.
From killing enemies.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like I'm doing totally fine. On the experience curve, but it's really interesting, and it, like, I've been forced to maintain multiple different squads. Like, usually, like, you know, like, you, I don't remember, did the original XCOM have fatigue or no?
I don't, if it did, I don't recall.
I think they wore fatigues.
Well, okay, so you're, like, if a guy gets injured, they're out of commission for a while, but usually, like, you have, like, your core squad that's pretty strong. This game forces you to keep multiple squads because, like, while one squad is infiltrating, you can't use them on other missions. Mm. So you have to develop lots of different characters, and it encourages you to fully explore those skill trees.
Cool. I really do want to play XCOM 2 more because the guy speaking at PAX, Storytime Speaker, is the lead designer, right?
He is, yeah, and I guess there's a... It's pretty heavily rumored that he'll be announcing a DLC there.
Jeff, is there a mod for XCOM that's, like, short war, and it, like, makes things easier?
So I,
so I'd be into that.
I don't know.
The answer is no.
Is there probably XCOM not. 2 Heroes that I can play?
Where you just give it money, it gets easier. Not that I'm aware. I mean, I don't know. There might be a mod to make it a little easier, but yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it's like something that is made for people like me. I probably wouldn't recommend it for either of you guys, but I love it. It is fantastic. It's giving me the same thrill that XCOM 2 gave me, so I'm really excited about
awesome.
It.
Awesome.
And I can talk about the other thing that I checked out, unless you want to do more of your giant pile of games, Jamie.
Yeah, I'll do...
Well,
I just
actually,
have so
I'm
going to
say, Jeff, why don't you talk about your thing, because I would love to hear your perspective on this thing we've talked about before. How are you taking it?
Okay. So I started up Dishonored 2. Finally cracked open a new game. Well, last year's game.
What are you playing on?
I didn't
on?
Get too far. PC.
Cool.
So I haven't gotten super far. My initial thoughts are the story is really weak.
Yes.
Like, hilariously weak.
Yep.
I hate every character.
Agreed.
The Void Engine is an inferior engine to Unreal.
Yep.
Yeah. but the game still seems like it'll be pretty damn good. I'm excited about it. It has its hooks in me already, and I'm basically, like, in the tutorial mission. Like, I did the tutorial, and I did a good portion of the first mission where you have to go through the safe house.
Everything,
and I like it.
All of those things get better, including the engine if you futz with it a little bit. You'll figure out, like, turn.
It runs great. I just think that it doesn't, like, this is not really the engine's fault, maybe, but the movement doesn't feel
good. It does not feel good.
Yeah. Things just feel a little weirder. Like, that game always felt janky, the first game, but, like, there was some logic to the jank. This time, I don't feel like there's quite as much logic.
There's this weird desire to, like, approximate human movement to a video game, and it's just like, that's not how things should be.
Yeah.
Like, it's so interesting that you guys say this, because I didn't experience this at all.
It's like playing Quap, like, where you're like, well, I guess my feet are still moving. I shouldn't be, but my feet are still going, so I take a couple of paces.
Well, there's
forward.
Like, you can turn down the head bob, which is the thing. I don't know. There's just like, there's these little things that feel a little off. I feel like it's going to be a bit of adjustment to get used to, but I'm still really excited and super ready to be back in that world, even though I could care less about the paper-thin plot that they've fed me so far.
The plot does improve. I don't think that game stands out in my mind for its plot. I do think that they flesh out the characters enough so that at the end of the game, I was invested in the story, and the lead-up to the final battle was, you know, an emotional one, albeit, you know, not to the extent of other great games whose stories I really enjoyed. But the star of that game is the mechanics, and I really hope you stick with it, because towards the end of that game, when you're firing on all cylinders, Jesus, and especially if you're playing on PC and you're able to save scum, I think you're going to really enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm excited, and I'm excited to play as Emily, even though she's so far but a pretty bland character. I'm ready.
Speaking of Neo, another great thing about it is that if you die, you come back like in 0 seconds. It's on a console.
As opposed to 45 seconds.
It's you come back almost immediately. I was so impressed the first time I died, and I was like, "All right, let me go get a sandwich." Oh wait, I'm ready. What? Okay, let's play. Sorry.
No, that is a great point, though, Jamie, to bring up with Neo. I agree with that 100%.
No, that is, I mean, that's actually, I appreciate that. Like, that's an important, for, like, a gameplay loop, that's actually really important. Having, like, a good respawn time is a good way to keep people engaged. So that's actually, especially compared to Bloodborne, which had, like, a 45-second respawn.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah, and Digital Foundry did a test, and they found that even on the regular PS4, it's still really fast. There's like a second difference on the Pro. It's a little faster, but it's still really, really fast on either system.
I mean, that extra slice of Pro meat they put on top of there has got to do something.
I'll talk about what it does when we get to my Pro. But,
Why don't you power through the rest of those games, Jamie, and then we'll talk, chat about Heroes
for a
second.
Little Big Planet 3 is really pretty, but poorly optimized, and the first thing I thought about it when I started playing it was, hey, I bet this was released on the PS3 and the PS4, and it was. so
That's a free game this month, I think, right?
Yeah, free game this
month.
How
many songs by Go Team does it feature?
None, but the soundtrack is actually phenomenal, no joke.
How many songs by White Denim does the feature?
You gonna splice in the ha-ha there again, Greg?
Ha-ha! No, man, no, we're above that. We gotta move on. New jokes.
So, you can splice in some Hugh Laurie, because Hugh Laurie is the bad guy in Little Big Planet 3, and he actually has a lot of lines, and it's really great.
Wait, so Hugh Laurie is the bad guy in Little Big Planet 3, and then original Little Big Planet, the narrator was
Stephen Fry.
Stephen Fry is still the narrator in this game.
Wow.
He likes to do video games.
Yeah. So actually, the story of this game is a lot more fleshed out than I thought it was going to be, and the story actually plays a huge role in terms of the levels and the level design. As someone who did play, I think I beat Little Big Planet 1. Mm-hmm. I never played 2. Little Big Planet 1 I enjoyed, but the platforming was ultimately, like, the worst, and the level design was interesting but uninspired. These levels, even though the platforming leaves a lot to be desired, these levels are wonderful. They're, like, little, like, they are little clockwork creations that have so much depth to them and so much moving parts. And a lot of variety, because it's not just you playing as Sackboy. There's also the dog. The dog has different abilities than the bird, who has different abilities than the fat potato guy. And you have to use all of them to get through these levels. And there's just a lot of voice acting happening during the levels, a lot of story progression during levels. So that actually really surprised me and propelled me to beat the game in one sitting. Granted, it's only like a 4-hour game, but still, I was like, damn, I want to kill Hugh Laurie.
Who hasn't uttered that at some point in their life?
So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I would encourage you guys, if you're really bored one day, to take a look. And I'm sure the level creation stuff is as robust as ever. I haven't futzed with it, but I did get through the main campaign, and I had a good time. I was surprised, to be honest.
It is free.
Yeah.
I think if I were going to be spending my time playing some old games, I would continue with my current methodology of playing games that have cool food in them for my secret ambition.
It's the only reason you like Final Fantasy XV.
It's the only reason.
They spent like a year on that food. Did you guys like read that?
Yeah.
No.
They spent a long time on the
food. They did.
Oh my god.
They somehow broke even. Oh, this is news, actually. Final Fantasy XV broke even on day one, which blows my goddamn mind.
Yeah. It probably broke even as the product Final Fantasy XV and not Final Fantasy XIII Versus.
Yeah, I think there was some trickery there, honestly.
It's like sold through really versus sold to or whatever the terminology is.
They probably already wrote off the losses for Versus or something.
Yep, I expect there's something in there that they were able to...
Yeah, that's a good call, Griff. I didn't think of that.
Cheese those numbers.
That game has made it through the med school tests, the popular knowledge tests. So
they know about it?
Yeah, they know about it. They also know about For Honor. Those are like the two games that everyone's talking about, Final Fantasy XV and For Honor.
Really?
There's this totally fascinating Venn diagram with med school students and 16-year-old high school students.
I think, are they mostly at that maturity level?
Yep.
I was going to say just absolute attunement to YouTube.
Oh man, but you gotta crack through it. I find, like, well, you know, there's a lot of downtime in med school, so we'll be sitting there staring at each other, a bunch of us, and I'll just be like, hey, anyone play games? And like some people grumble, and then like you just keep chipping at it, and then it turns out that like, oh yeah, one has like this $150 Link statue on his desk, and like, and the other one it's like they're all freaking, they're huge into games, but in the most superficial way possible. Like they don't have genres they like. They just play whatever is being pushed the hardest at that moment. But anyway, that's a digression. I want to talk about Resident Evil 7. Have you guys tried that yet?
Nope.
I got the game through the service that will not be named, and I had
especially
it.
Now.
I unpacked it, and then I put it back together and put it back in the mail.
Did you put it in the game system?
I didn't.
Is this the plot of an existentialist play that you're working on?
Yeah. Yes. This
That's
is actually my new series where I do unboxing.
But I do not play it.
I do unboxing videos for the service that will not be named, and I just unbox. I just take the mailing envelope apart and then put it back together and send it off.
Oh man, that's really a shame, because this game is
two
fabulous.
Reasons. Let me tell you two reasons why I didn't play it. One, Gene told me that it was very scary, so then I was like, well, okay, well now I'm back out. And then two, after I heard that and sent it on the way, I watched the Giant Bomb video for it and was like, yep, good choice there, Griff.
Just because you saw it was actually scary.
I saw it and it was scary. There's a lot of jump scares. I don't like
okay.
those.
It is.
How many limbs did you get cut off before the game was over?
Me? None, because I didn't play.
I know at least two.
Yeah, well, actually, the interesting thing about that is that those moments, there are various scripted moments that do not need to happen where you have limbs chopped off.
Which, wait, you can keep your limbs?
Well, first of all, the limbs are always come back. There's
as they do.
There's a story reason for that.
there's this first aid droplet that you can put on your limbs. And
exactly.
Then you come back.
No, but there's actually a story reason for why that's happening. And if you play the game, you realize that it's actually awesome that that's happening, because it's like that Murakami thing where there's crazy things happening to this character and he's not reacting the way that you want him to. And you're like, dude, your leg just got chopped off and you just put it back on. What is wrong with you? Why aren't you saying anything? But that's actually part of the story, which is awesome.
Okay, because usually when that happens, it's just, oh, I'm playing a horror game.
Well,
like, usually what happens is a bit like the character like is like, and then he's fine.
Yeah, well, it's part of that. You're wondering what when you're playing. Is it that, or is it actually part of the story? And it actually turns out that it's part of the story. But the craziest thing about those moments, this goes towards something else about the game, which I find really like phenomenal, is that there are moments which in any other game would be scripted and necessary and unavoidable. And if you they put so much time into these moments that if you were to somehow not experience them, that would be like a huge waste of time for the developers. But not in this game. You can play, I've watched playthroughs of this game that are completely and utterly different from my playthrough, down to the cutscenes that happen, which is insane. Wow. Because
you don't have to get your hand sliced off by a chainsaw?
You do have to get your hands sliced off by a chainsaw, but there's a later segment where your leg gets chopped off, and if you happen to scamper into that room fast enough and get through that little hatch, that actually doesn't happen, which is pretty awesome. But if that doesn't happen, it's more likely that you experienced a different unique cutscene earlier, which is kind of cool.
With a different limb cut off.
But it's really cool. I just like how people can play the game and their experience can be entirely different. And it's not scary in the same way every time. Because what I do a lot of times in horror games is I rush forward and die so that I figure out where I'm going to die and how to avoid it. Doesn't work in this game because the enemy AI, much like in Alien Isolation, is running and is smart and is doing different things every time. So the baddies aren't going to be in the same place as they were when you ran through the first time. They might be looking for you in a different way, or maybe you made a noise this time and they're coming at you from a different way. So it's really cool. That keeps you terrified the entire time because you don't know what's going to happen. Even if you've played through a sequence, you have no idea what's going to happen. I really like so Alien Isolation. I played that game. I love that game. That game is terrible. And the reason is, you have absolutely no way to defend yourself against the alien. So when you encounter the alien, you just say, well, that's it, and you reset. And that both is frustrating.
That's when you build
the wall. Damn it,
Griff. Wait, what'd you say, Griff?
Nothing.
he made a topical joke.
Comedy.
Oh, okay.
So that makes it not scary and not fun. In this, you can defend yourself, which makes it fun because you know that if you get caught, you don't have to immediately restart. But that also adds to the sense of horror in and of itself, because you really get the sense that the, you know, crazy family living in this house you're trying to escape is toying with you and playing with you, and they don't necessarily want you to die. And that is the story. And that adds like a real element of terror to it. Can I just say,
I saw a video where you kept shooting this lady in the head, and then she just never died, and I was annoyed. Is that how they all are? Are they all that spongy?
They're really... So here's the issue. There are moments where you're not supposed to fight the family, and there's moments where you clearly are. The moments where you clearly are presented that way, and it's very obvious when that's what you're supposed to do. There are also moments when you're just supposed to run away, and those are very clearly demarcated as well. If you try to kill one of the family members while you're supposed to be running away, you actually can, and I did that, but they will come back. But during those times, they are extremely spongy.
When you're running away from the unkillable big boss enemies, how prevalent are your butt cheeks?
What?
Do they hang out? Do they hang out of your hospital gown, or is it very painful?
Oh man! But
you didn't play much of that game, did you?
Metal Gear 5.
Yeah, yeah.
I never beat that game.
Wow.
Sorry, guys.
Wow. That's the best horror game. All right.
So this, but you guys have to play this game. You push open doors slowly with your hands, which is terrifying. Like, you don't just open a door, you put your hand on the door, and you slowly open it up as you walk through, which is terrifying.
This sounds like an homage to Resident Evil, where they show those cutscenes of you opening doors. Yeah.
Exactly, but now it's actually scary because it's not a cutscene and you can be harmed during this period.
I apologize, too, if you already went over this, Jimmy, but one of the things that I noticed in watching people play through it was there's a lot of moments that happen where it's like not like you're locked into a view and you have to watch.
We already did this.
No, okay. but I want to hear your question because there's a lot of facets of that and that play into the gameplay in a lot of different ways.
No, I was just going to observe that, like, you can see things that are happening in the world around you by looking and peering and, like, sneaking a glimpse through a window or through a door that's not, like, the standard typical, like, lock your viewpoint down. Like, a lot of stuff is actually happening in the world around you, and you view it in a natural sense. You can totally miss it if you just run through it, but it makes it kind of more terrifying if you're like, wait, like, something's happening. How come I'm not being locked into the view of this happening video game?
Yeah, definitely. And that the because it does not do that, it makes it all the more terrifying.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't give you that game cue of, like, okay, snap into cinematic mode.
Yeah. The audio in the game is fabulous, and there are cues that will happen randomly and also appropriately for the gameplay that you know go along with what you're seeing, because, for example, these family members are wandering around the house randomly. You may see one through a window in a spot where the game never intended you to, but then there will be an audio cue to go along with that, which is really cool.
Yep.
I just think this is, like, a really fabulous game. It actually adds a little bit of no one has made this comparison, and I'm kind of, like, shirking to make it, but I'm going to make it anyway. I almost feel like it's a little Soulsy at points because, A, it's extraordinarily difficult. You're constantly starved for ammo. You have to really think about how you take down the enemies, especially not the family. Like, there are these kind of, like, filler enemies that you have to take down, too. And you have to really think, like, all right, one's going to pop out here. I'm going to spend two bullets and two bullets only on him there. And if I can't do that, then I have to run back to the safe room and start over. And, like, if you run back...
So are you saying it's kind of like a survival horror game?
Yes.
I was thinking the same thing, but I wasn't going to go quite that low. But it's good that... I know what you're saying, Jamie.
No,
like, from
good.
What I watched,
it
like, it's kind of bringing the franchise back to what that franchise was.
Mm-hmm. And then there are moments also it's in the game towards the end of the game where it kind of opens up a little and it gives you a lot of ammo, and it still is terrifying, and you still feel like you're starved for ammo even when you're not really, which is something really hard to accomplish. Huh. The ending is very Resident Evil. I actually hated it because I loved the first 75% of the game.
Isn't there a character called Hunk?
There might as well be at the end. I don't know.
Is there a character named Tofu?
At the very end, there's a like straight Resident Evil character, and I'm like, I hate you. Get out of here.
Oh, was it Boulder?
Some dude
and
with
you had
sun
to punch it to death.
Punch the Boulder. Do you know about punching the Boulder, Jamie?
No.
Oh my God! You need to Google Chris Redfield punches the Boulder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Resident Evil 5 was...
it is so goddamn good.
I played a little...
The best,
so I
worst.
Played... Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's the best worst.
I played 1, but the GameCube remake, so I never played the original one.
Okay.
I played 4 on the PS2, and I played this one. So that's my history with this. I played a little bit of 5, but I hated it.
You played Code Veronica on the N64.
This game is so confident, so cinematic. When you start the game... There's no splash screen. There's nothing that says Resident Evil. It's just, it's a completely black screen, and it just starts. And the character models are very photorealistic. It's unfortunate that for some of the minor characters, the character model quality isn't there. But for the most part, like, you look at these characters, even on my crazy 1440p computer monitor, and I'm like, wow, you kind of look like I'm watching a video, which also adds to the terrifying nature of the game.
Can we talk about the fact that there's tapes in this, but it's, like, modern?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. There's a lot of Japanese BS in this game that doesn't make any sense, but lends it, like, a charm that it needs to have. But, yeah, great game. If you ever feel like you want to shit your pants, you should do it.
Order Domino's.
They're on the bones. A reference that none of our viewers will understand.
Go into the back catalog.
Yep. And For Honor is Bushido Blade and looks really good on the PS4 Pro, and I hope there's a really fleshed out single player campaign, because I feel like that's what that game is built for. And the multiplayer is cool, but, like, weird, and the one-on-one stuff is hella weird, especially considering their servers were, like, really poor during my time playing. I played on 2 days, too. I checked at different times, and it was really weird.
I don't mean to grill you, but what makes it cool and what makes it weird?
Okay, so I think that the system that they've built, where you have three... There's left, right, and top. You can block left, right, or top, and you can also attack left, right, and top.
It sounds like Neo.
And you can also and you can also stun to break someone's guard. It actually, even though, you know, broadly speaking, it when you're just describing it, it does sound like it shares a lot with Neo. It totally doesn't. It plays. It's a lot slower, for one. You really. Which makes
it's one hit kills too, right?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
You have a health bar and it goes down. If it's I would say it usually takes around 5 hits to kill, like 5 solid strong hits. You also have strong hit and weak hit like Neo, but I really think it plays differently. So when you're playing the computer, which you do when you're playing the intro mission. That kind of three-way block, three-way attack, and also dodge roll and parry in this kind of slow, lumbering fashion that the game is designed, that feels actually awesome. Because you're going through minions like a Warriors game, like a Dynasty Warriors game. And then when you see like these like named people on the map, and then you actually have to duel them, and it really takes time and you're thinking. And it's usually one-on-one. In the multiplayer game, which is what you go into immediately after the training mission, the one-on-one missions are great because that's where you really take time and you have to visually look where the other person is blocking, and then you have to try to fake them out by like starting to swing up and then swing left or something while they're blocking right. And, you know, these single player matches can take a while, and it's really cool. It's like a massive standoff, and when you win, you know, it feels great. These matches can go back and forth, which is really fascinating, like in a Bushido Blade kind of fashion.
Like a Nidhogg kind of thing? I know that's a bad comparison, but like stance management and dealing with what your opponent's doing, and then like the tug and pull of trying to like win the entire event. It kind of reminds me of Nidhogg.
I think that the feeling is similar. Yeah, the mechanics aren't at all, obviously, but the feeling is kind of similar. Especially, I remember playing some Nidhogg matches where, you know, your opponent is like kissing the end zone for them, but then you somehow pull it out at the end and you win.
That's
and
awesome.
That kind of stuff can happen here too. However, when you're playing more than just 1v1, and you're on these big maps with like CPU controlled mobs, both on your side and the enemy side, you're like having fun swiping through the mobs, and then you meet another like actual player character in the map, and then you start doing that cool dueling thing, which is perfectly tuned for 1v1. And then someone else comes in and just kills you. And I don't know how that's going to work. Maybe I just suck. Maybe that's something you get used to. But like your up, right, left blocking is for the person in front of you. So when another player comes behind you and just owns you, it feels really shitty. So they're gonna have to, you know, I don't know how that's gonna work out. Now, if there's a really awesome single player campaign in that, game, I'd totally be down, because that will be...
I think there's supposed to be a single-player campaign, right?
Yeah, I think there is. So we'll have to see. It could go either way.
Cool. I'm really excited to play For Honor. Like I said, that's coming to me in the pipeline. So,
yeah, I'm excited too. When is that coming out?
Tomorrow, or the Valentine's Day, I think.
Really? Holy shit, I did not know that.
Yeah, damn. I think, yeah. Valentine's Day.
Wow. All right, well, I got shit to catch up
on. For Honor, for love.
Guys, you see, the problem is I've been busy playing this other really great game.
Oh?
Yeah, it's
I didn't see it on your list.
It's a really balanced game.
Uh-huh.
And it's very skill-based.
Okay.
I'm speaking, of course, of Fire Emblem Heroes, the greatest mobile game ever made. I don't even think we really need to talk about this that much, because it's not a good game. No, it's actually fine. So I think for a free game, I think the single-player maps are decently fun. If you log in every day, they give you enough shit that you can do stuff. It's really annoying, though, because it's like every free-to-play game, it, like, front-loads you with lots of goodies, and then it's like, oh, you don't get the goodies so much anymore. You've exhausted the well. Why don't you just spend money real quick? Come on, just throw me a bone.
I think this is, like, a really eye-opening experience for a lot of, like, American gamers as to how the gacha market works across continents, like, because when I was doing this, I'm like, oh, this is the exact same thing as Monster Strikers, or mm-hmm. the Final Fantasy 15 spinoff game, or the other mobile game that's gem based and match three or whatever.
Yeah, they are all like this with the awful pulls, but this is my first exposure, so. I'm enjoying it okay. Plus, I got lucky and literally got, like, a 5-star on my first pull, one of the best ones in the game.
Nice.
And then 2 5-stars on another pull, and then another 5-star on another pull. So, and I have one of the really rare characters whom I'm going to level up to 5-star once I get enough hero feathers or whatever.
I've had 3 pulls, and I haven't had a single thing over 3 stars, I think.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I've had about 5 or 6 pulls, and the best has been my first, of course, with some interesting things coming up at the end. But I think somebody put it really, really interestingly on Twitter, where they, I can't cite the source on this, but their reaction was, why do I want to play with these chess pieces when I cannot make them fuck?
Apparently relationships will come at a later date, mm-hmm. but we shall see.
Can't you touch them? Can't you, like, rub them somehow?
No. You can unfortunately touch them when hearts come out, but it doesn't actually do anything of note. You just touch them.
That's all I need.
I do like the art style of it. Like, it is very, very well presented.
One of my preferred characters has a little butt cheek showing.
Ooh.
I'm sure that's really good for The Office.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a lot pervier than regular Fire Emblem, which has taken on a bit of a pervy streak recently,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm not entirely thrilled with. I mean, yeah, it's not that great. What was I going to say about it, though?
The actual challenge for the mission-to-mission combat is almost non-existent. At a point, it just becomes like, okay, do a grind leveling game until you can manage your stamina, which is amount of times you can play during the day, versus how much you want to level new characters up, which is a big old bummer.
Yeah, although once you get to the highest difficulty, there is some legitimately challenging stuff in there. Which is independent of level. Well, it's not independent of level. You still need the best characters. The thing that really drives me crazy is, so even if you get, I have like a 5-star, but her growths haven't been very good.
Yeah.
So she just kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And there's no way to make her good. Unless I draw another 5-star and get better growths when I level her up.
Yep.
So it's basically, it's like Counter-Strike, where not only do you have the weapon, but you have to get the right level of battle damage.
So it's... I heard that when you get further in the game, because right now my stamina doesn't go down that much, and also it replenishes, like, really quickly. I hear that closer to where you are, you actually just can't play the game for long periods of time.
Correct.
Because you blow through stamina so quick.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
That is the game.
Also, I think that orbs are completely overpriced. It should not be $20 for a five-character pull. It should be $5 for a five-character pull.
So, Jamie, that is...
is that normal?
That's why I'm saying, like, the previous entries into this franchise, that is par for the course.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, this is not Nintendo overpricing. This is standard protocol.
Wow.
That is bananas. I can't believe that. My God.
But how many times have you been tempted to be like... Well, maybe I'll just get another pull, and you're like, well, $10, like, that's not awful, I guess. But then once you look at, like, the stats and your output and all that stuff, you're like, well, that's not, I mean, this is hot horse trash.
The price was so high that I actually didn't spend money on it.
Oh, which, yeah, I've never paid money for this crap yet.
But, like,
I have paid my Google opinion rewards credits because I literally can't find anything else to spend them on. I have tried.
How many Google opinion award credits have you put into the game, Jeff?
Like, let's see, $7 maybe, something like that.
I'm seven or eight. I'm really curious. Like, I think that recently in Japan or China there was a movement and a law that said, like, you have to disclose the rates in which this will actually propagate the items that you want. Like, this needs to be 100% transparent for gacha games. So I can tell you with 100% certainty, when you play this game your first time, your first pull is better than any of your other pulls. Like, undeniably. So, I wonder, now this is just my conspiracy theory, if there is some tracking involved that's like...
Look for the story on InfoWars.
When you actually put money into it, if it detects, like, there is a monetary value input... It will give you that same kind of initial boost to say, okay, here you go, keep coming.
I don't know. The thing that I find really fascinating is that when I purchased orbs through Android, they don't exist on iOS. So even though I already spent them, it, like, permanently has me 10 orbs ahead on Android, even though, like, I have it on both platforms. It's very weird. Yeah, it blows my mind. So orbs are platform specific.
That is weird.
That is very strange.
You can look at the appearance rates, though. Like, they tell you the exact appearance rates, unless they are lying. Oh. Which, if there is, in fact, a law, then that would be bad.
Right, that's what I'm saying, is, like, the appearance rate's like that, but I'm wondering if there's some, like, caveat, some loophole that they could sneak around where it's like, well, we can tell you the base level, but we'll increase them in certain situations.
I don't know, maybe. That'd be some skeevy shit.
Give us 20 years into the future, and we'll get back to you.
I don't know. All I know is I am done spending money on the game, just because I don't want to actually use real money. I'm fine with using my fake dumb Google money, but I'm not gonna actually. It's just not. It's not okay.
Jimmy, gonna turn that YouTube credit into Hero Orbs.
Yep.
Oh, you should.
Just gotta make $100 first, which by my calculations will happen in 537 years.
But yeah, no, it's I think as far as gacha games go, I don't know enough about the genre. Griff, do you feel like the core mechanics are at all interesting or no?
I think that the core mechanics versus the other gacha games that I've played make for more user-defined action. So when you go into a mission, I feel like I can go into that mission and complete it without a question of, like, well, this game is just kind of a pinball machine, versus, you know, other games that I've played where there tends to be a lot of luck and a lot of loosey-goosiness associated with how you're going through a mission because of weird stat abilities and weird kind of, like... It really does seem like a pinball game in a lot of the other things that you play.
Gotcha.
And this is much more direct, where it's, you know, A to B to C, step to step to step. If you lose a battle, it definitely doesn't feel like you did something or you got a bad kind of RNG moment. It's more of like, yeah, I could have done that better.
Yeah, and I actually do feel like there's like a reasonably decent, like, it's kind of interesting mechanically in that you don't ever miss. And the abilities activate, like, on a predictable cadence. Yeah. So everything feels very, like, very puzzle boxy, which I think can sometimes be great. Other times you just load up a level and you're like, oh, I lost.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100% on that, Jeff. Like, I'm right there with you. It is more of a known quantity.
Yeah. So to that, in that way, it's kind of cool. I mean, it's not.
That's also why I continue to play it.
Mobile gaming is the future of Nintendo. Yes, exactly. It doesn't make me feel like mobile gaming is the future of Nintendo, but it's still more fun than your average gacha game, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad game. It's just all of this stuff. You're right, Griff. It is my first introduction to this type of game, this type of pricing, and it really leaves a bad taste in my mouth. I wonder if, as more games like this come out, this will just be par for the course, and I'll kind of turn the corner on it. But for now, it's like, this is really unpalatable.
No, it's good that you haven't, because games like this have existed for a very long time, and they are very popular.
Mm. Everything is terrible, Jamie.
Ah.
Too everything, too terrible. all right, yeah, I've said all I want to say about Fire Emblem. It is addicting, though.
Yep.
That's all. Jamie, you said you played Revelations in response, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that real quick.
So that game is interesting.
I had the same moment, Jamie, we talked off air about this, like the same moment of like, I was playing Fire Emblem Heroes and now I want to play a real Fire Emblem game.
Exactly. And
would you say it was revelatory?
Wait, Griff, when you
No, I'd say it, I had an awakening and I wanted to play.
When you went to it, Griff, were you like,
would you say it was your fate?
It was my due conquest to finish.
Did you just feel sorry? Did it feel so right, Griff, when you did?
It felt like 7 silver axes or spirits or whatever. Marth! I don't know.
Marth! It just felt so... when I actually, like, you know, booted up Revelation, it actually reminded me what I love about the series, and I was like, yes, I will just play this. I don't need to play that weird phone thing. And I'm really enjoying Revelations. So the first few missions that I've played through are interesting because you're not accruing additional party members at the same speed that you were in the other... I played Conquest, so in the speed that you were in Conquest. And I've gone through 2 or 3 missions with just 2 or 3 characters. There aren't opportunities to pick up other ones, which is cool. It's kind of unique to have only 3 characters on, you know, these... you know, sizable maps and having to think.
But don't you eventually just get all of the characters, though?
Not yet. Right now, in terms of the story, my character's like, how can we get everyone on our side? We have the truth! And so we're not there yet. We're banished to that, like, ethereal plane place.
Okay.
So I'm slowly picking up characters, but I still have, like, 4. And it's interesting. I think the missions and maps are as well, you know, thought out and designed as they were in Conquest so far. It does feel like an addendum to Conquest. I would not want to play Revelation as the only playthrough of this game, but I'm definitely enjoying my time with it.
All right. I mean, I have it. You know, I got the twin pack, and I was working through Birthright, and then just kind of like lost the plot a bit. But I will. I will check it out, because that does sound intriguing.
I like how you can...
at least from a tactical level.
Yeah. I like how you can jump to the Branch of Fate's point after Mission 6 and just go from there, so you don't need to replay the intro part.
Yes. That is appreciated.
That's fun.
And you can use your same Corrin as you had last time as well.
Yeah.
If you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. All right. Well, anyway, I am glad that you are revisiting Fire Emblem, because there's, I think... Fates as a whole was a pretty great product.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for the Echoes one. That sounds funky and weird.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm all about that shit. But all right, you wanna we're pretty deep into this. You guys wanna power through some news stuff real quick and then wrap it up?
Yeah, I think we should start with the most important thing here, which has been alluded to a billion times. Jamie, you got a PlayStation 4 Pro.
Yeah. Pro. I feel like a professional gamer now. I did buy my DX Racer chair. I do scream at the beginning of all of my videos.
Oh, nice.
It is very cathartic for both me and my audience.
Mm. Would you consider
yourself an iPad professional as well?
Are you a pro bro?
I'm a pro bro, yeah. I have a lot of wife beaters. My hair is slicked back. And I just drink Monster Energy Drink. That's it. That's all I do. So the first thing I was surprised of when I opened the box is that it is very large. It is.
It's like 12 pounds.
Right? It is very large. It is very heavy. It is noticeably bigger than the original by a lot. And I was actually worried that it wouldn't even... I have to stand it up vertically because I want to put my Switch next to it when it comes. I was worried that it wouldn't even stand up vertically in my TV stand. Thankfully, it does, Jesus but it Christ. Has like a centimeter clearance.
Jimmy, will you repackage it and do an unboxing video on your channel?
Yeah, sure. No worries.
Danger Toast. Yeah.
I should have done that. Oh, I didn't even think of that. Ah, oh, damn it. The other thing I noticed is that people complain about it being loud. Like, I hear that a lot on NeoGAF. That's absolutely not true for me. It is whisper quiet. It's a lot quieter than my base PS4, which didn't sound like a helicopter taking off. it also gets less hot. Like, I put my hand behind it because my old PS4 would get really, really hot, and then the noise would get louder. And then when I would put my hand behind it, it would feel like my fingers were melting.
Yeah, you didn't reapply that thermal paste, bro.
Yeah, Jamie, I've actually got another. I've got a fan, like a small, like kind of desk fan thing, blowing on my PS4 now.
Griffin, what the fuck do you do to your console?
I put cat hair in there. Family,
is this a Fondcast? Is this a family podcast? Am I drunk right now?
I put a fan on my console so they can play better. Because I think that's what happened. Like when I was playing Gravity Rush 2, it just kept just doing nothing. I put the fan on it.
I have
now we're
three
fine.
Cats and a dog in my home.
Okay,
and this doesn't happen to me. I don't understand.
I think it's probably the climate. Like you guys are running at like a negative, or you're running at colder rates over there. Like I'm in the balmy Midwest, and you guys are just in the freezing, frigid Arctic of the East Coast.
I think that
I don't know, man.
I think the fan. I'll have to research this, but I do believe that the fan on the Pro is physically larger. At least the housing is, so there's less rattling. I noticed that the Pro is actually substantially quieter, so that's nice. The controller, you know, it's like redesigned, and I expected it to feel a little different. It doesn't feel different at all. I compared the two controllers. Except for the light bar on the front of the touchpad, there's literally no difference whatsoever. Exact same feel.
I think I know why my PlayStation 4 is different, and that's because the more games you beat, the slower and gummier system gets.
I'll bet you when you beat Dragon Age Inquisition, that had quite an effect.
Totally. Right? It's the weight of those trophies sitting on top of it.
Oh man, it's much faster going through menus, noticeably so, which is great because the old one just like even when you open the store, things load slowly and randomly. And
I remember the store being that bad.
Oh, it's super bad for me.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Also, download speeds
terrible on PS3.
Download speeds seem to be better, which was great. I downloaded Neo, which has, I think it's like 30 some odd gigs, but it's one of those games where you only need to download 12 to play.
Oh, it's so nice.
And it's actually true. Like, I actually downloaded 12 gigs and pressed play thinking, all right, now it's going to load me into like some like holding zone.
Yeah.
And I won't actually, but no, you get the full game at 12 gigs.
Yep.
And I downloaded that relatively quickly, which was nice.
Does it come with a terabyte at base?
Terabyte base, yeah. And hopefully, I mean, soon when 4.5 firmware is released, you'll have external hard drive support, which is awesome. I mean, for base PS4 as well, but it's just nice that they're adding that in. And I think it's a nice little upgrade. I essentially got it for free. I traded in my old one and also my Wii U, and I got this for free, and I don't regret it. So Neo specifically is a nice case. Neo, regardless.
When you traded in the Wii U, did you trade just the tablet or did you trade your Wii as well?
I actually just bought a nunchuck. That's it, and they just gave me the full retail price of the whole console. So what was I saying?
Was your grandma really mad when you sold her Wii?
She was happy. She
How am I going to watch Netflix now? Did you at least keep the disc?
I can't get the Wii Vote channel anymore.
I keep forgetting what I was saying.
Neo.
Neo. Okay. So regardless of whether you have a PS4 or a PS4 Pro, when you start Neo, it asks you, do you want 60 frames per second? Do you want 30 frames per second with maybe less resolution? Or do you want a hybrid of the two? You should definitely choose the 60 frames per second version. And if you're playing on a normal PS4, you're going to mostly end up playing at 60 frames per second and around 720p, sometimes going way below 720, which is bad. And if you have a Pro, according to Digital Foundry, you get 60 frames per second and like 1080p locked like 99% of the time, which is what I'm experiencing. It looks fantastic. And the frame rate is super solid and game looks great. And I really think that you should play Neo at 60 frames per second because it is an action game. And the input rate changes too when you change the frames per second. So definitely play
it at
60.
Why not play it at 50 frames per second? Is there some problem with that, Jamie? If you played it at 50 frames per second, would it introduce some kind of issue?
I think that there is, and the name of the issue is near field communication. I think is
NFP,
the name.
I believe.
Are you guys talking about transferring?
Yes. Did you guys see that the Switch is transferring?
And also the
no. Okay. Never mind.
No, I heard.
Kojima said the Switch is transferring. Damn it!
I read that.
Carry on, Jamie. Tell me your more important
idea.
Story.
One of the first games I tried was Ratchet & Clank, the new Ratchet & Clank, because people said that of all the games, that one you can like easily see the difference even on a 1080p screen. And that's totally true. When I booted up Ratchet & Clank, it went from kind of almost looking Pixar quality to absolutely 100% Pixar quality, best anti-aliasing I've ever seen in any game, including on my ridiculously overpowered PC. Like, it looked bonkers. Still 30 frames per second, but absolutely anyone can just identify that the image quality is really staggering. And I really don't regret not having a 4K TV, because I feel like trying to get the PS4 Pro to 4K is silly to begin with. It just doesn't have the power. So I feel like more and more games are going to end up doing the Neo thing, where actually the PS4 Pro is just a 1080p machine. And I'm fine with that for the time being. So that's my thoughts on that. I'm actually more impressed with it than I thought I'd be. I kind of upgraded it thinking, you know, sometime down the line I'll get a 4K TV and then I'll really see the difference. But I'm already seeing the difference, and it's cool. I like it. But when I went to buy the stupid thing, I went to GameStop. I traded in all this crap. The guy takes forever to do the whole trade-in.
Well, that's because you're dealing with a pawn shop.
Yes. I think it took about 40 minutes to do all the trading in. And then they tell me they don't have a PS4 Pro in stock. And I'm like, oh, that's funny, because the website says that you have it. And they're like, no, you know, we only get an allotment of 3 or 4, and they sell it pretty quickly. But, you know, the Wachung store down the road, it's literally a mile away. They're like, oh, yeah, they have tons of them. Just head over there. And I'm like, okay. So I head over there, and I buy it from them. And I walk in and I say, I'm here to buy a PS4 Pro. And I present them with my credit thing that they put on like a little GameStop gift card.
Your copy of Game Informer.
And the dude looks at me and he goes, did you just come from the Blue Star store? And I was like, yep. And he's like, okay, they had it in stock.
And
I was like,
head in his hands, and he's like, ugh.
No, but he literally says, I quote, I hate those motherfuckers. And he was telling me, he's like, we have the same district manager, so he knows what they're doing. And he knows that they pawn it off on us, so it's fine. Like, they actually don't take a hit when they sell new stuff, because they know that the Blue Star Mall, the Blue Star store, the other store, they know that they're doing this, and they know that someone's got to sell them new games. So they actually don't fear for their jobs or anything like that.
Oh,
they told me.
Oh, that's fascinating.
But it's only because those two stores have the same district manager, and the district manager knows what's up. So the district manager knows that the guys in store A are assholes and the guys in store B are actually doing their jobs. And it's really bad, because when I was in store A trading in all my stuff, I also heard them turn away anyone who came in for a new game. People came in looking for for Resident Evil 7, turned away. People came in looking for Neo, turned away. People came in looking for Tales of Berseria, which I guarantee isn't sold out anywhere, and they got turned away. It was ridiculous.
That sounds like every GameStop encounter I've ever been in, ever. Where I go in there and I'm like, "Hi, I didn't pre-order Pokemon. Can I get a copy of Pokemon?" And they say, "Ooh, no, we're all out of stock. Did you pre-order it?" And I'm like, "No, it's Pokemon." And they're like, "Well,
that's because it's a Nintendo.
We're just all out." And they're like, "But, well, I can just give you my personal copy that I pre-ordered and reserved for myself." And I'm like, "Okay."
I'd have to sell it to you used, but you get a $5 discount.
Well, they don't do that, but it's just like the sob story of like, "I'll give you my copy because, you know, we don't have any more because not enough Jesus people Christ. Pre-ordered. And you're like, "Oh, okay, well, then maybe your store should just stock enough for your employees to make this same ploy."
Yeah.
That's gross. My GameStop is mercifully actually full of pretty reasonable human beings, so I've never had that happen. But Circle of Life, man, that shit, I don't know, that might change things. We'll see.
Yeah.
But that sucks, dude. They
made me drive a mile down the road just
scheme is going on.
Just to get the goddamn PS4. You should be proud to sell me a PS4 Pro. Like, you should be like, "Great, well, he bought it here, he'll buy his games here too." Like, ugh.
That's not how they work though, man. That's just not how it works now.
Yeah.
Oh, one more thing. I asked them at the good GameStop, I said, "Could I have gotten around this by like arguing and saying, 'Listen, I know the deal. I understand the pressure you're under. However, I did just trade in $500 worth of stock to you. So now you guys have that because I'm here. Can you please just sell me one?'" And the guy was like, "Yeah, 100%. If you had said that, they would have sold you it." And I was like, "Oh, interesting. Damn it."
I would think that it'd be counterintuitive because you're like, "I just made you buy all the stuff off me. So, now I'm not, you know, now why would they have any business in, like,
selling?" No, they want to get trades.
But
trades are, like, one of their pillars.
Yeah, that's a plus for them.
They want to sell trades. They don't want stuff brought in.
No, from what I understood from what I was talking to the guys about, that getting trades, paying for trades, is almost as good as selling trades. Because then you're replenishing your store's stock of stuff that you can make massive margins on.
Mm. Yeah, it's good for them.
That still seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, it does.
Think
but
of it this way, Griff. Like, they don't pay you what they sell it for at all.
Oh, I know. And I know that. To sell their used stock there.
Okay. Well,
all I'm saying is like, it would make more sense if you gave them a bunch of stuff and then they gave you something in exchange.
But if you look at those, if you look at their leaked slides for the Circle of Life program, that one of, like Jeff was saying, one of the pillars is taking used merchandise, like paying for
right. You,
that ends up adding to your, as opposed to subtracting, which selling new stock, new products does. But I understand what you're saying. It is completely counterintuitive.
Yeah, the whole thing is stupid. I mean, that store is just, I'm glad that I have gotten to a point where I don't have to go there pretty much ever.
Mm. Oh, did you subscribe to the service that will not be named?
No, I just get things through online retailers. Ooh. That only charge me 20% below retail.
Smart.
Yes, which shall also not be named. Hey, speaking of pricing, you guys want to talk about Nintendo?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So that online price was announced for Japan, and I think it was, what, 2,500 yen? Is that right?
It was, wasn't it Kimishima in like a Q&A or something like that, and he said that it would be approximately that for the year?
Something like that, yeah. Maybe it was between like 1,500 and 2,500 yen or something.
Right. I know you guys are gonna, you know, beat me down, but I don't think it was a formal announcement. It was something that was said in an investor's call sort of scenario in which things may change. But the word is that is what the price is going to be.
Are you saying that they would be ridiculous to call it NSP?
I would say that they'd be ridiculous to take a price that was quoted in yen and translate that to American money and then say this is what it's going to be, no questions asked.
I mean, you don't think it's going to be $60 a year, though, do you?
I would hope not.
No, not again. Griffin, how drunk are you?
So drunk. All the drunkest.
Well, I agree with... I don't think that we know this for sure at all, but I also... I mean, if it was $60, I'd be shocked. They have no online games.
Right.
At first. Granted, the whole thing will be free at first, but still.
Well, I think that, you know, saying that if it's 1,999 yen, and then it's going to be $20 is probably stupid. But, like, saying if it's $20 in Japan, it's not going to be... Like, especially for a console that doesn't have a region lock, like, having it cost far more in the U.S. than Japan. Like, you would imagine it'd be somewhere in line with the exchange rate. So if they've quoted a range, you'd have to guess that it more or less lines up. I mean, this isn't like the disparity between new game pricing in Japan and new game pricing in the U.S. I mean, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, it's totally different. Like, I mean, why would something cost more in a different area and less in a different area?
No, but the pricing structure for games in Japan is very different. And Japan tends to pay more for online services than we do. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I can't. I'm not doing this again. I will not. The bottom line is I'm happy that it's going to be less than competing services.
I'm happy that they've alluded to it being less. And I would hope that ends up coming true.
I hope it's not a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. That's all I'm saying. To get back to some topical humor. All right, fine. We don't even need to talk about that because it's just dumb. Jamie, tell me about Ryzen. I want to hear this shit.
So, ever since Intel has been selling its Core i series processors, the i3, the i5, the i7, as well as its Core i series like enthusiast systems, which is a different type of motherboard and very expensive processors, and this has been about 5 years or so, more like six. AMD has not been able to compete at all. And because of that, there's been really no growth and substantial performance increases for CPUs in a really, really long time.
Yeah, like 5% per cycle, right?
Exactly.
There hasn't been a lot of rising from them.
Exactly. So right now Intel sells a $1,000 processor that you need to buy a special motherboard with. It's not a normal 1151 Z series motherboard. You need to buy an X99 motherboard. They are also more expensive.
Is this a Xeon?
No. This is the Extreme series, the X99.
Oh, okay.
So they're still i7s, but they're the SKUs are numbered higher than the standard, you know, i7s.
Mm-hmm.
And these enthusiast series processors have more than four cores. So even the new i7 that I purchased on their mainstream line of processors has four cores, eight threads. AMD is coming out with a processor which performs either at the level or even in some cases better than the $1,000 Intel chip for around in the range of around $300.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which is just going to completely change the landscape of PC gaming, overnight. Like, in March, if anyone was to buy...
But what does that translate to, the yen?
Hmm?
So what does that translate to, the yen?
We can't assume.
I think it's going to...
I'm guessing probably around 500,000 yen.
I think it's going to really, first of all, it's going to spur Intel to actually, put some, R&D money into their mainstream processor lineup. And it's also going to make it so that for, the next 6 months, after this thing launches, at least, maybe even longer, everyone's going to be using AMD chips to build their computers. And the price of building a really badass gaming rig is going to go down significantly because you don't even need all that power. There's going to be lower SKUs in this lineup. There's going to be a $200 SKU in this lineup that is going to be insane. And I think
Is this all stuff? Who's been writing about this? Because this AMD touts, remember when Piledriver and stuff came out? They were talking up that shit crazy, and then it was just not good.
Yeah, I think I go a lot by a website called WCCF Tech. Which started out as kind of a rumor mill, but in the last two or three years has really become really more reliable. And You know, people have these chips.
I actually really like them more when they were just WF Tech.
What the fuck?
You mean W Tech F?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So people have these in their hands, and they don't usually... WCCF Tech and some other websites in that realm have gotten pretty good at not reporting on things that are just blatantly wrong. So I do believe that this will be in that performance realm. But let's put it this way. Even if this thing performs at half that, it's still an amazing value, which is pretty crazy.
Wow.
So
I don't know, man. I've been burned by AMD's, like, promises so many times. I need to come out and exist before I can actually believe
it. I completely agree. Like, I would not, like, pre-order one of these things until, like, you know, more substantial people have put it through its paces. But I think that everything is pointing to this thing really being disruptive. And I think it will eventually trickle down into consoles too, like PlayStation 5, Xbox 2, or whatever they're going to call it. Like, this will have repercussions for those systems, which is cool.
I'm excited. I mean, I want forward movement in the realm of processors. I think that's been so stagnant for so long.
Yeah. And AMD boards are dirt cheap, too. So I really, like, the cost of, like, an entry-level gaming PC now, if you don't count the monitor or the OS, you can get, like, an okay system for around $600-$500. That's going to go down with this, which is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see what happens.
Yeah.
So... Thanks for the heads
up. What goes below dirt cheap? If dirt cheap is $600 for a gaming PC, what category do we qualify this now? Is this crust cheap? Is it mantle cheap?
Core cheap.
Core cheap.
Is that because of a mantle? Mantles, cores, those are all things.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You made it.
All right. Well, yeah, I want to read up on this now because I really had not been paying attention to Ryzen. I just figured it would be another kind of, like, wet fart, basically, from now.
It still could be, but that's it.
Well, you've piqued my interest, so there's that. It takes a lot.
I'm really happy to hear that PC prices may go down, because that's good news for everybody across the whole gamut of gameplay and situations everywhere. So I hope this is real and it works out for everybody.
Yeah.
No doubt. I agree. Well, awesome. Do we have any other shit we want to talk about before we put a bow on this bad boy?
Not really. Splatoon test fire is happening. Horizon looks awesome. Blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jamie. There's those two topics, but it doesn't really matter. Instead, let's wrap this thing up with a bouquet of flowers for your SO in the form of bets.
Ooh. Ooh.
Speaking of which, to go back to a previous podcast that we did do, I will have to go see the Resident Evil movie now. Thank you. Because you finished that stupid piece of crap game.
Wait, what?
I said that if Jamie were to actually finish Resident Evil 7, I would go see the Resident Evil movie. So that's
good.
That's in the docket for me to do. Just saying, I'm making good on it. I'm aware of it. It's in the plans.
Nice.
Yep. But bets. Does anybody have any good ideas on what to do for a bet? Because I got one.
What do you got, Griff? Hit us.
Price of the Nintendo Online Service.
Oh my fucking god.
For American audiences. North America.
I'm going to say 25 a year.
Okay. We just write this down here.
Nice.
Take your time to say words.
I was waiting for you, Griff.
Oh, I'm writing.
What is your
He hasn't bet yet. Go ahead, Jamie. Go. Oh. You can't fucking prices write this shit. Put your bet in.
I'm not trying to prices right this shit. I legitimately think they're going to choose a weird number. I don't think it's going to be 25 or 30. I think it's going to be my bet is $27.99.
That is a good bet. Actually, my second bet would have been $21.99. I'll be honest with you.
Jimmy, you said 27?
Yeah, $27.99.
99?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh yeah, $24.99 for me. Sorry, not $25.
$24.
If we're being technical here,
$24.99. Does current online stuff operate like that? Where if you go for
yeah, it does.
Okay. So mine is actually $27.99 and 9/10 if you use credit, and $27.99 and 0/10 if you pay cash.
How much if you have a Miitomo account?
It's free because that's just torture.
So Price is Right rules, lowest wins. Is that what we're saying? Because that's what the 99s are for.
Yeah, you don't want to go over.
Okay.
Oh, you don't want to go over? Oh fuck.
I mean, we don't have to do it that way.
No, I mean we can do it that way.
I'm gonna go high on mine, and I'm gonna say $34.99. Thinking more realistically $30, but I'm gonna make it interesting. I'm gonna say $34.
I think since we're all going higher than it could be, let's say ditch the Price is Right and just closest wins.
Sure. Okay.
Griff, that's some freaking. You're bold, man. You really believe what you say about not trusting the exchange rate.
Not trusting things that aren't actually quoted in real releases.
All right. Whatever, man.
I mean, look, I'm going to say $34.99 NFPs.
What is the exchange rate from NFPs to dollars?
How much is the most expensive Amiibo right now?
$2.
Probably like $4. I don't know. My first gen Rosalina might have some real value to it. I gotta find out.
Would you get a good serial number on it? Like one of the original lots?
I don't know if they're actually doing serial numbers or not. I'll have to check. I should. I gotta get some money back. For my Amiibo.
You have to get a Geiger counter. And
your poor,
the one
your
that
poor lobster
the
children
most...
aren't going to go to college now because you invested poorly.
Nah, man, I just gotta ride it out. Once the Amiibo are gone, I'll be king.
Did we just like fall into the Beanie Baby thing there for a hot year?
Yep.
I think we did.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it was fun, you know, the act of going to stores and chasing crowds. It's kind of cool, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Not buying the new ones, that's for sure. I got my Smash Brothers set, minus Cloud and Corrin. I'm happy.
No Bayonetta yet, though, still, right?
I don't have a Bayonetta in my house, so I guess not.
Let me check here, and no.
If they put out a Bayonetta amiibo, I would be shocked.
It's on their...
They're going to.
Oh, they are?
It was supposed to happen. Just like Cloud.
God. That's weird. Yeah. That's so weird.
They're making amiibo for every single character.
Huh.
Yeah. So.
All right.
All right. Whenever they reannounce Smash 4 for
Switch.
For Switch, yeah. That's when it'll happen.
That might actually not be wrong. So, give Jeff bonus points for that.
All right, bonus points for the Smash Switch amiibo bet. I'll take it.
Can we do another bet? Do you think they'll announce the pricing for the online system before or after the console launches?
After.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain it's going to be after.
I'm just going to, just to play devil's advocate, I'm just going to go the other way and say before.
Do it.
Okay.
Will there be another Nintendo Direct before launch? That's my question.
Yes.
You say yes, I say no. This is Nintendo we're dealing with
here. Yeah, I'm going with Jeff too. They're going to be radio silent for a while.
They've done all the marketing they need to do.
Yeah. You don't even think there's going to be a 30-second thing before, I guess, are you saying like Direct or like anything?
No, Nintendo Direct. Will there be another Nintendo Direct?
Before,
because anyone can put out a press release. That shit takes 5 seconds.
Right, or they can drum up some new advertising.
I think there will be a Nintendo, I'm going to go on a limb here. There's going to be a Nintendo Direct before launch, and it's going to detail the UI, and it's going to tell you about how Miis are still in there.
Well, they already said Miis are in there, but just they're not. It's not the same. Like, you can make Miis if you want to, but you don't have to at all.
Oh, okay.
Like, they're dramatically scaled back.
Okay.
But okay, they haven't really shown the UI officially, so that's fair.
All right, well, I've recorded the one official bet. If you want to make some side bets here, go for it and do that on your own time. I think that this makes for a good stop point in our current broadcast. So thank you, everybody, for listening to Boss Barrel Radio. Do you guys have any parting words? Things that you may want people to check out?
John Darniel, the lead singer of the Mountain Goats, which is a fabulous band, is also an author, and he just came out with a new book that I'm very excited to read. And
it's
like
a horror novel, right?
Yeah, it sounds like it's right up my alley. And it is called... Oh my god! I don't even know. But it's out...
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
It's all right, I'm going to go now.
Universal hey, Harvester. Bros,
check out my YouTube channel. Join the Brew Pub. just comment, like, subscribe. Faves if you love it. And yeah, I'll see you next time. Peace.
Jeff, can you take that again with a British accent?
No, I don't think I can.
The book is called Universal Harvester.
NPR likes it.
Really?
They're going to interview the fuck out of that guy. Oh, am I not supposed to say bad words? Such a wasted bad word, too. It's completely unnecessary.
Okay, well, then I will follow that up with my stuff. I'm on Twitter at Griff Hoffman. You can view videos that are associated with Boss Barrel at YouTube. And then, of course, the website is bossbarrel.com. And if you're feeling saucy and peckish and excited to be involved with fun things that will never actually come to fruition, go research some video games that have awesome food in them, because as a project that will never see its true ending, I would love to have an encyclopedia of awesome video game foods.
Oh,
and
my
kind
God.
Of like an Iron Chef battle of some people presenting what they actually believe is the best video game food. In like a heated rap battle style situation.
That would be amazing. Love it.
Yep.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. So that's it.
Shut it down.
Let's do it. Thanks, gentlemen.
Bye.
Adios.
Across the generations now and for a time, Fire Emblem, heroes bring the folks life, journey from distant worlds to steal the coming night. With a great ready countryside, see a champion for from on high. In the end, the time of heroes live, and their legends never die. Fire Emblem, no spirit shall shine.